Did we ever do it looking to score when you did any of the Hal Hartley movies that I watched where because he does all his own score?
No, I know that. I mean, I'm sure we did. I'm sure that's what
I'm, we must have.
Yeah, I'm sure we had to do
some of them. I think are good. I think that some of the songs in Trust are, well, we haven't seen a good Hal Hartley movie.
Well, I mean, I saw.
Did you see Trust or which one did you see?
No, but I've seen the all
of
the.
You showed me Trust.
I've seen all the what's his face asshole garbage man trilogy.
Henry Foyle.
Yes, thank you.
Such a succinct summary.
Garbage, local garbage man is asshole.
Or like the devil?
Yes. Yeah.
Or that really got you.
Well, it's pretty accurate.
Yeah. Wait, you've seen all three?
Yeah. I haven't seen Never Rightful. That's true. I have not seen. I forgot.
Like he becomes a garbage man, but I just thought you meant that like he is a garbage.
Yeah. Well, it works in both ways.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Works in both
frankly.
Directions.
I think you should call Hal Hartley and say like, if you ever needed a name for the box set.
Where three friends sit down, watch a troubled movie, have a nice drink, talk about what was good, what was bad, and how we could all do it better. I am your host for this week, Lee. Who the fuck's Helen Keller? Delahanty.
I'm Chris. Her hobby is anything I do. Ravel.
And I am Brendan Jiggins Claus Drischler. That's right. I'm invoking the Jiggins Clause. Lee, anytime you say something stupid, I own another percentage of the podcast.
Oh, no.
There goes your source of income.
How many stupid things can I say in the next 10 minutes?
Well, and we each own a third currently.
Yes, naturally.
So.
Yeah. Well, if you could not tell by those nicknames, we have just finished watching 2002's
Yes.
Who is Cletus Touts? A movie that I can't believe was suggested by, was accepted by the rest of the podcast, Coven.
Chris said he was okay with it, and then I just went along.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, listen, was I excited to see a film prominently featuring Tim Allen? No.
A movie that I saw briefly when I was in a Christian Slater hyperfixation in early high school.
Yep. As soon as I Googled this movie when you said what it was, I said, oh, I see why you watched this. This makes perfect sense.
Okay, but
let's
so
continue.
We have Christian Slater, we have
Richard Dreyfuss, Portia de Rossi, RuPaul, Tim Allen, and then more like character actors
yeah,
type.
It's a cast and a half.
A cast and a half. Like me after going skiing, am I right?
Yeah.
You're
and it
right.
is quite the movie.
Thank you.
Obviously, to get through this movie, we needed to have something to tide us over. What did we drink this time?
The drink that we made for Who is Cletus Tout is cocktail nonspecific, which is 4 ounces of hot tea, 2 ounces of rum, 1 ounce of orange juice, 1/2 ounce of smoked maple syrup. You combine all the ingredients in a shaker and stir it gently until it's fully mixed, and then you just pour it into a mug and garnish with an orange slice. Pretty straightforward stuff.
Yum.
Yum.
Yum. I mean, I feel like we say this every time we do a hot drink. We do them well. They're yummy. Yeah. They're delicious.
It was nice. It was
comforting.
I think I could have probably used a scotch more orange juice. I think I didn't quite use even as much as the recipe called for because we just didn't have enough. Because I guess I underestimated how much juice is in an orange, apparently. I thought it would be more anyway. So yeah, I would have probably done like maybe a little bit more orange and maybe a little less maple. But aside from that, I liked it. What was the tea that we usually, like, what was in it?
You know what? I don't have it handy. It's a very earthy tea.
Okay.
It's like, I know it's got, like, rose hips and other things, but it's not one of my, like, sweeter, fruity teas. It's got more of an earthy taste.
Yeah, which was, I think, fitting for something.
Yeah, and also I think that rum and the other stuff we put in it is a bit naturally sweeter.
Right, yes.
And so it was a good to keep it away from being too sweet.
Rum is literally made from molasses, right?
Yeah.
Molasses to rum, to slaves. Who sailed the ships out of Boston?
Okay. That's save it for the 1776 episode.
Yeah, I'm not a rum drinker. I don't, again, it's just naturally too sweet for me. I could have done this with whiskey. I think I would have liked it.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree with you. The only thing I was thinking is that we had just used, bourbon or whiskey fairly recently, so I thought, why not try something different?
Right.
Yeah.
But I do think the natural inclination and what I would have done if I were just making shit up would have also been whiskey or bourbon.
I think if we only chose the liquors we know we love, all of our drinks would either be whiskey or gin.
I mean, pretty fair much. Point.
Yeah, no, that's, but, I mean, that's probably true.
That's not a problem.
Who
not a problem.
Ever chooses vodka? I mean, no offense.
There are people.
I think there are times when vodka is okay. It's not often.
If you need to make something alcoholic and not add flavor,
right. I mean, it's bonus. Mostly
some,
just that. Yeah.
Some people call the vodka soda white gay water. Because that is a very white gay drink order, is a vodka soda.
Anyway, it was a good drink. It was another good one. Before we get into the discussion proper, I don't know what this movie's about. And
what is Cletus Tao?
I feel like that Wikipedia summary is going to be nice and brief.
It is.
And when is Cletus Tao?
It is about... So when is Cletus Tao is the present day, because it's told in flashback. The film is told primarily in flashback, as the film first follows a hitman, Critical Jim, who follows and holds at gunpoint a man he believes is Cletus Tao, but who is actually Finch. Because Critical Jim is so fond of film noir and other classic films such as Casablanca and Breakfast at Tiffany's, he's willing to listen to Finch as he tells his story, imagining it as a film in progress. Finch obliges, explaining how he got to be mistaken for Cletus Tao. Finch happened to be in the same jail with Micah, who stole diamonds more than 20 years ago and then hid the diamonds and soon landed in prison. With Finch's help, Micah manages to break out and the two get new identities for themselves, courtesy of a coroner who owes Finch a favor. The problem is that Finch's new identity is that of Cletus Tao, a photojournalist who managed to film Rowdy Virago, a mafia figure's son, strangling a woman. The head of the mafia gets his men to kill Tao, which is how the coroner got the identity for Finch, but when Finch goes to Tao's apartment to look for his passport, a neighbor calls the police, who inform the mafia that Cletus Tao is still alive. Mm. After Micah meets up with his now grown-up daughter, Tess, he's accidentally shot by the men sent to kill Cletus. Just before dying, Micah gets Finch to promise to watch after his daughter, and thus Tess and Finch begin an uneasy relationship as they look for the diamonds. Meanwhile, the mafia head decides to bring in a professional hitman, so he contacts Critical Jim to finish the job. Critical Jim is more interested in where Finch's story will end, specifically if he's able to reconcile with Tess in the end, giving the story a perfect Hollywood ending. In the end, Rowdy is arrested and Critical Jim helps Finch reunite with Tess, killing those who are after Finch. Critical Jim then walks away, dancing in homage to Singin' in the Rain. That is who is Cletus Tao.
And then...
So, real quick, the characters here. We've got Christian Slater as Trevor Allen Finch, Richard Dreyfuss as Micah Tobias, Tim Allen as Critical Jim, Portia de Rossi as Tess, RuPaul as Ginger Markham. Now, Ginger is a character who is not mentioned in the synopsis, which I think just kind of goes to show you how little
impact
this character kind of really matters. But it is basically a neighbor who lives in an apartment next to the real Cletus Tao's apartment, who shows up twice whenever they are at the apartment for various plot purposes.
Was RuPaul, like, known in this?
Yes. RuPaul, I think, like, RuPaul was always in the 90s just sort of known as a pop culture drag queen, and then, like, Drag Race kind of made
pushed it, over
like,
the top. Yeah. They were, like, in movies before. They had music out before. They were appearing on talk shows in character, like in drag. They were like one of the earliest like mainstream drag queens.
And lastly, I would throw in also real quick a character who's sort of mentioned but not specifically mentioned by name, Billy Connolly as Dr. Savian. Savian, who is the mortician who gets the information to...
His pals with Finch.
Right, whose pals with Finch gives him the information about Cletus Tao and tells him to pick up the passport for his identity.
Yeah. No, I don't know that I've seen Billy Connolly act in other things. Does he act normally?
I mean, he does, yeah. He's been in stuff. He was in Muppets Treasure Run.
Oh, obviously. Yeah!
Of course. He was in one of the Interminable Hobbit movies.
Was he?
Yes. It's in, I want to say it's in the third one.
He was a bit old.
Well, that's the thing, too. He also had, what did he have, like ALS or Parkinson's or something? Like, something bad. And so, his voice is in the movie, but he is, like, CGI. Yeah. It's not really him because he couldn't physically play the role.
Yeah.
So, it's jarringly weird whenever you see everyone else is just men in latex, and all of a sudden, like, the CGI dwarf talking like Billy Connolly pops up and starts dancing around. It's just jarringly weird. R.I.P. Billy Connolly to a real one.
Yeah.
I think he did act periodically in shit. I'm sure that there's more shit that I just can't remember.
Well, he's fun in this movie.
No, he is fun in this movie. It's a shame that he's only in like three scenes and doesn't get a whole lot to do.
Yeah.
Because he could have brought some levity to the picture.
I know that Christian Slater did have a fair amount of leading man roles, but it doesn't come off as a leading man that much all the time.
No.
I feel like. No, I mean, I think Christian Slater was always kind of, and I say this with affection, too weird to be a leading man. You know, he is more of a character actor. He's not unattractive, but he has a certain sort of shifty energy. Look to him, you know?
I like that shifty.
Yeah, no.
For sure.
I get it, definitely. But it's also weird that someone like Jack Nicholson was able to be a leading man, and Christian Slater, who is so often compared to Jack Nicholson, even in this movie.
For good reason.
Yeah, no, it's true. He is very much like him. Like, never quite, for whatever reason, managed to do the whole leading man thing in the way that Jack
did. It was like I pointed out that the movie where I first had seen him in Broken Arrow, where it's like he's the like main character, but he's like sort of in the background behind John Travolta in the poster. It's like, hey guys, I'm here. I'm actually the hero. The other guy's the villain of the movie.
I mean, I love him in Heathers. He really plays quite demented character.
Baker Street Irregular on Broadway.
Yeah, he played Billy as an 8-year-old boy or whatever. He was like 10. He was very young.
Yes, in one of the Star Trek movies. He's everywhere.
All right. Well, let's get into it. Let's just the basics.
Yeah.
This movie is like, I guess it's like a crime, like sort of caper.
A heist comedy?
Kind of comedy.
Yeah.
With like... Are we? Do you think it was billed with a romance, or is it just kind of one of those we
the
threw it in
is
a romance?
Kind of
it is
secondary.
Not. It is secondary for sure.
I mean, it's there.
It's not like and the comedy is. It's not like funny. Funny.
No, it's more like that was amusing.
I don't think it's trying to be funny. Funny, right? It is just trying to be like.
I think it's trying to be droll and amusing, and just kind of like clever, but not necessarily in like a larf out loud way. More in a like, oh, huh.
I mean, again, I would say something that I'm probably going to say a lot. It feels like it's trying for a Tarantino-level sort of comedy, where the comedy is derived from the everyday sort of banal conversations that's going on.
Yeah.
Like, the two guys having discussion about, like, now why did that one hillbilly in Deliverance fuck Ned Beatty when he could have fucked Burt Reynolds?
That's very true.
Which, that kind of a thing.
It's like a very... I mean, the way I sort of would explain this movie, if a film school student watched just Tarantino and Usual Suspects and was very stupid and wrote their own movie...
But
it
also
would be kind
really
of
enjoyed classic cinema
and
wanted to make reference to it. Because I just love you. Those two goons are like, I mean, I can see going gay, getting some of that man meat. But why settle for Ned Beatty when you can have...
Boyd Reynolds.
Exactly, Boyd Reynolds.
I'm a New Yorker.
I guess, maybe.
Has anyone ever seen the Mitchell and Webb look, like, lazy writers sketch?
I don't think so.
It's a series of sketch things they did where it's like, the lazy writers wrote, like, medical show, and it's just like a scene from the show was played where it's like, we gave him the wrong medicine. It's like, all of these sort of shows where it's like, yeah, well, we just thought we'd focus on the characters, the doctor, rather than get into the technical. The audience doesn't really care anyway. It's like there's like these guys do no research.
Yeah.
That's the vibe I got from whoever wrote this movie.
No,
very
that's
much.
True. It feels like every movie reference is from one of the most popular, highest grossing movies. You're not doing a real deep dive into sort of the genre, which other film noir movies. You're doing Double Indemnity,
which,
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Again, like I'm the only person who is a fan of Remington Steele here, who has seen a lot of it. But I, from my money, whoever wrote the character of Critical Jim is absolutely a fan of Remington Steele.
Because you said it was very similar.
It's almost identical the way that Remington Steele talks about movies and references them and why and how.
And quotes them and then cites them.
Yeah, like he'll do like a thing and be like, it's just like that. It's just like this thing in this movie or like this quote. And then he'll say the title of the movie and the year it was from, like... Again, like a sort of autistic person whose special interest is movies or whatever. And it's all like every episode is usually about an old movie, but it just has that same ring to it. And the way that both characters seem to hyperfixate on like the silver screen, like sort of the older movies, like there might be a couple modern ones thrown in, but Critical Jim's references are pretty old and dated and refer to classic Hollywood.
Yeah.
And so I definitely feel like it's like, what if Remington Steele was a hitman instead of a thief? And wrote the character that way.
And
then got Tim Allen to play him.
And then was
which
played
I,
by Tim Allen.
I feel like the writer had to be disappointed by that.
I want to say
the writer and director are the same person, first of all. So
well,
we must keep that in mind as well. So just remember that. Chris Van Wyl, I don't know who he is. This person has written a couple of other movies. Nothing that I've really heard of. A movie called Rockula. About, I guess, a Dracula who has a band.
Yeah.
This is his only directorial credit.
Okay.
Perhaps shockingly.
I kind of want to see Rockula.
I kind of want to see Rockula, too, to be honest with you. I think maybe for movie nights we should be watching Rockula. I'm sure that he did not picture Tim Allen, but it is one of those things where I have to imagine just a question of how much money do you have? Who is the biggest name that can get you?
Was Home Improvement still on in 2002? Or I guess 2001 when this would have been shot, probably.
I mean,
if you're getting post Santa Claus Tim Allen,
that's true. Yeah. He's already a big
name.
That's
some money.
Okay, Home Improvement ended in 99. It looks like.
Okay.
So this would have been like, yeah, this would have probably just ended when he was shooting it.
Yeah.
So he was, you know, he did that. He had like a couple of hit movies. Tim Allen probably took a little bit of like a pay cut to do this movie. It almost feels like, you know, like I feel like this movie did not have a huge budget. I'm sure a lot of it went to Tim Allen, but I feel like he probably made less than he would have. So like in some sense, this must have been something of a labor of love for Tim Allen to do, you know.
But
he probably
just
thought it was an interesting character.
Between the writing and Tim Allen playing the character, I really can't get... I cannot.
It doesn't come together. They don't.
I can't pin this character down. I'm like, what was he supposed to be?
The one time his character makes sense is when he, I guess, takes over the story. And then, so he basically a scene ends with Christian Slater. Christian Slater gets away on the train, and then you think he's going to walk off, but then instead he walks forward towards the sound of spray paint.
Right.
And yeah, then he just starts like haranguing these young Latino men who are putting graffiti on the wall.
Yeah.
And then suddenly there's a whole bunch of them.
Right.
And then he goes off on this bizarre tear about, like, patriotism and respecting America.
Right, one of them's like, hey, what are you doing, Captain America? He's like, Captain America, yeah, let's talk about America.
I can,
the last four letters of American.
Yeah, it's quite, it is bizarre.
I'm going to pull out some guns and all of you draw things on your friend's head with Sharpie because you love tattoos, right? And
it's
like...
What did I say? I know you little fuckers. All you little fuckers love tattoos, feels...
Yeah.
Ooh!
Yeah, which feels very Tim Allen-y, to be fair.
And we were saying while we were watching the movie, like, it does feel like Tim Allen was like, okay, I actually need a scene where...
Yeah.
That was how they got Tim Allen.
Right, I'm sure that's what I'm right, yes. He will take the pay cut if he gets to yell at minorities
if
for a while and tell them they're ruining America.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
So it's odd. So that also further complicates the what was this character supposed
to
be?
Right, yes.
I don't think that tracks with anything else in the character.
No.
Because then they even are like fine and or friendly with Ginger.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Because Ginger's not graffito tagging
the
subway.
But I just would think the same
In America, you can be a drag queen.
Yes.
You cannot spray paint on walls.
I, America, can be a drag queen. But I actually will say, I thought that was the one time where the movie quote was actually very fitting, because Sunset Boulevard would absolutely be a movie a drag queen would recognize.
Sure, of course.
Yeah.
I would think.
At least,
you know.
Well, it's not fitting in that respect. It's not fitting to the scene.
No, it's only
fitting in that, like, yes, this character knows.
It's fitting
Sunset
that
Boulevard.
Ginger can repeat the rest of the line,
yeah.
Or say the
right.
rest of
or
the
at
line.
Least knows that much of it. At least knows I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. DeBell.
But yeah, so let's back it up a bit.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The basic plot here. The whole thing about whether or not this was like a film student who's very stupid or lazy writing. The core problem with a lot of the stuff that happens in this movie is that you pick it up, if you sort of touch it with your pinky finger, it sort
yes.
of...
crumbles like cornbread immediately,
cornbread. So, like, for example, it starts with this prison escape, and there are so many things about this prison escape that simply don't... I'm like, how did you guys... No way
so I have a little bit of a paragraph I wrote here about prison escape.
Go
so just
it.
I'm going to just go through some of the questions real quick. Let's sort of paint the picture for this. This prison escape, we see a little bit of what's going into it earlier on, so it doesn't come out of nowhere. What you get basically for this escape scene is that... While all these inmates are, you know, doing highway work or whatever.
Chain gang, basically.
The typical chain gang sort of stuff. There is a car for the prison guards and the bus for, you know, transporting the prisoners. Now, over at the guards truck, okay, Micah, Richard Dreyfuss.
I say, like, light?
Has set up, well, I think it's like the light from the back of the truck that he is like, attached something to.
I just mean, it's like he has, it almost looks like a large, I don't know how to describe this, but it's like a large white paper-looking disc that then has different squares of different colors, and it's meant to rotate, and it's almost like a he put together like a stage light. He's essentially
doing
a projector.
Right. I mean, he is. Yeah, he does have a projector. We see that.
Yeah.
But just
okay. I mean, I don't know, because all I can tell you is that they show him using this projector in his cell before we cut to the scene. Anyhow, so they are out on the road. He has set up this projector. He drops a smoke bomb. The smoke bomb goes off. While the smoke bomb is in the air, smoking everywhere. He is projecting himself calmly walking into the woods on the smoke. So the presumably the guards all think, oh no, he's run off to the woods. We must chase after him. While this happens, he gets in the front of the truck and drives away. Now,
kind of through them.
Yes, kind of through them. Now, I would argue, why go through the trouble of projecting yourself onto a smoke bomb? Why not just use the smoke bomb as distraction?
I thought it'd be in like this is definitely going in my fix as a minor detail, but I'll say it now. It'd be funny if like he just aimed it the wrong way and he just sort of walks into nothing. Right, and the projection fades. Like,
he's a ghost.
Like you just kind of see how fucking pointless it was because they're already turning around.
Right. Like, you've already diverted their attention.
Yeah.
So,
but, well, I'll tell you why it's in there.
Yeah.
Because he's a magician.
Of course,
because
it's his gimmickry.
Yeah.
Well, they set up that when he does his big crime
in the beginning,
he uses projection
inside a balloon that somehow fools everyone.
So
thinking
from
there's
I'm a dumb writer, or at least a writer perspective, but like we got to use some gimmicky magic.
Right, he does the magic. So as he's driving this truck away, he sees that another inmate is going to shank Christian Slater. He pops open the door, hits the other inmate, knocks him down. Christian Slater's like, "Oh no, what's happening."
It's been established by this point that Christian Slater is a career criminal Finch who's in there for fraud because he's like a forger, and he's like. They have this conversation where he's going to help Dreyfus get out, and Dreyfus is going to give him a cut of the diamonds that Dreyfus hid. But he's like, well, do you want him to escape? And Finch is like, well, no, I am going to be out in like a couple months. I don't want to fuck that up. I'll just be on parole. So we'll go through the plan. You'll escape, and I'll wait. And then he pisses off, like he's apparently pissed off some, you know...
violent criminal.
Yeah, some other career criminal who's big and scary and wants to kill him. So this is why, in the spur of the moment thing, when he sees this criminal coming towards him with a knife, Dreyfus is like, you gotta get in the car now! And he gets in and it's like, does he?
Yeah. No, right.
Maybe, I don't know.
Again, yeah, there's some unanswered questions there as well. So after he gets in the car, they drive off. They are about to jump into a train, which they do. That's how they escape. They leave the car. They jump into a train. The train goes by the police officers.
They can't have known about the train.
No.
No.
That is luck.
That was pure dumb luck.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Again, so yeah, not a great plan. We all agree on this. They're on the train. They drive by the cops. Ha, 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 wonderful. We're free. The next shot is their clothes, their prison attire lying in the yard of a woman doing laundry. The woman doing laundry picks them up and notices them. Is like, what? What's this? So presumably at some point there will be police officers traveling around asking people, have you seen these two criminals? This woman will say, I found their clothes.
They could be a state line away.
Yeah.
But those clothes are undoubtedly going to be like tagged with
some. Right. Yeah. At some point someone will see the clothes. Someone will realize, oh, they're near here or they came through here.
So that is incredibly stupid.
Right. No. You could just throw them away.
Yeah. Take your clothes with you.
Right. Yes.
Throw them in a dumpster somewhere.
Right. Set them on fire. Whatever. Anything other than.
My dear man.
Yes. Yeah. Other than leave them for this woman to find in her yard. Very stupid. Having gone through all that. So first of all, I don't understand. To begin with, and this is sort of going the past, why didn't Portia de Rossi just go get the diamonds for herself at any point after this anyway?
She didn't know where they were.
Don't you see her with them putting the photo in the box?
That's a good point.
Oh, yes.
Six, maybe? I don't know.
I guess, no, but it is, but I just think it's extremely stupid. Because it would, I think, honestly, the first time I saw it, I thought she wasn't with him either. And then when I watched it again tonight, I was like, oh no,
well,
she was with him.
I knew that she was with him, but...
Maybe she just didn't remember how to get there because she was so young when it happened.
They took a train, right? So maybe she didn't remember where the train left.
Possible. But at any given point, Richard Dreyfuss could have probably covertly told her where the diamonds were after the fact when she was an adult. And, you know, able to do things for herself. So why that? Why did he bother hiding them at all when he could have just fled the country immediately with his daughter?
Mm-hmm.
These are things that there could easily be a reason for. I'm not saying in the sense that, like, this is a major plot hole. These are minor things that could easily be explained that the screenplay does not feel fit to do.
Yeah, like, because, like, again, some of these are, like, movie nonsense, right? Where it's like, there's no movie if
we don't do
this.
This
doesn't happen. There's no movie if Christian Slater just is like, no, I'm going to stay in prison.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, see you later. Have fun. I mean, again, why the projector whatsoever? You could just throw a smoke bomb, distract everyone, and drive away. The projector buys you absolutely nothing whatsoever. How did he get a film projector a smoke bomb smuggled into prison? I know they already have smuggled in two pigeons under his shirt.
Know, but just literally how? It's a cartoon prison.
Right, no, exactly.
Here's a question I have now.
Yeah.
Again, we talked about how Richard Dreyfuss' character doesn't come off. We don't really know his story.
Well, because he barely speaks.
He is very quiet in the movie.
Yes.
He doesn't come off as much of a career criminal and definitely less savvy than Christian Slater's character does. And initially, his plan was to escape alone.
Mm-hmm.
What was his plan to not get caught without Christian Slater there to be like, hey, can we get some ID, fake ID material
for Billy
Connolly? Because it's only through Christian Slater's knowledge of Billy Connolly to help him and right. ability to create fake identities that they're able to, like, exist outside for any length of time.
I guess, charitably, if I was being charitable, I suppose his plot would have just been to immediately find Portia de Rossi and be like, let's get those diamonds and let's get out of here.
Yeah.
I guess. But I agree with you. It is profoundly weird. The only thing I would say also, though, to talk about whether or not Richard Dreyfuss's character is supposed to be like a career criminal or if he's just one guy who pulled off one scheme and this was like his big, you know, his big opus. He does say whenever Portia de Rossi shows up with all like that weird ass equipment.
You know how I feel about the guns.
Right. He says, you know how I feel about guns, which to me, like, I guess it could also just be like, we don't believe in guns in this household, Portia. You did that.
It does sort of hint at like, oh, in your past crimes,
right. I never worked with guns.
I never use a gun.
Yeah. Yeah. So it really is just like, again, and this is like, this is a character about whom we know nothing. A character who dies after 20 minutes. A character who barely speaks. A character who you think should inform the relationship between Christian Slater and Portia de Rossi. But effectively, like, just fucking doesn't matter.
He's
like, he is out of the movie
so fast. He's
clearly
a non-entity in the movie, despite being the guy who basically sets the plot up. I think the fact that we can't tell, the movie has not told us clearly whether or not was that crazy magician crime a one-off? Was that the end of a series
right.
of heists he had committed? Who the fuck knows?
Yeah.
Did he get up to more crimes afterward?
Yeah, and this is something that would be so easy if you come up in dialogue between Portia de Rossi and Christian Slater to build their relationship a little stronger. They could be talking about her dad because that's someone that, you know, they have that connection there. But again, no, we don't really need to do that because we need to hear more about why would you fuck Ned Beatty when you
when
could
you
just fuck Burt Reynolds instead.
I'm so obsessed with that conversation, though. I'm so glad I heard it.
Right, well, that's just the sort of first bit.
Right. Yeah, there's that.
The cops also. We got some shit with the cops.
Yes.
Too many of them?
Well, yes, there's that.
There's too many of them.
I guess.
I don't know any
well,
of their names.
I don't know either. Really, the only ones that matter are the old guy that's going to retire who lets Christian Slater off the hook in the end.
Which is
Detective Horvath from Queer's Folk.
So, that's true.
He's made like a career playing police officer because he just has like the look, you
the
know?
Look, yeah.
Yeah.
And I know it's not a one-to-one, but it just reminds me of those obviously fake stories of like, and then everyone in the store clapped.
Yes,
they said that.
Because the professor told Maureen Todd that, that God is real and not dead, and everyone in the classroom stood up.
It's so crazy that it was like, hey, this time just let me go because I was doing all this for a good reason. And the cop's like, you know what? Sure, buddy.
Yeah.
Here's your passport. Yeah. I'm going to go get a coffee. Yeah.
Again, like the just a little guy defense.
Yes. Yeah.
I invoke the just
your
a little guy clause.
Just a little guy.
Just like, wow,
I'm,
that's
just
compelling.
A little guy.
Actually, you know what? You're right.
You can say about the cops. The big thing, I think, tying the cops into like the other scheme, though, that's equally stupid to me is the fact that Christian Slater shows up to the cops, says, I am Cletus Tout, the guy who everyone wants to kill.
Mm-hmm.
There are attempts being made on my life. I need to be put away somewhere so that I don't get shot. They're walking outside. He has Portia de Rossi stand on top of a building, aimlessly shoot actual bullets in their general direction.
With a like a Uzi or something.
Yeah, it's a big fucking gun.
An actual machine.
Right.
She does not wear gloves.
Yes.
She loves guns.
She leaves the gun there.
Somewhere, yeah, she leaves it somewhere because she's not carrying
it.
The
cop's gonna just investigate the roof,
right?
Yeah,
they're gonna
find
the gun which she has held with her bare hands.
Purchase history,
yeah,
and they're also gonna find her fingerprints all over it,
right? And so, like, this is insane. At any point, she could have literally killed one of them, which would have changed the plot very drastically.
Yeah, because at one point, she loses control of the
gun. Right, and she's just, like, firing in the air, like, bum, 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 bum. My God, at least make her competent, you know?
Was
at least make her
comedic?
Good at this.
Like,
yeah,
the recoil.
I'm sure it's supposed to be hilarious. So, after
and
this...
It was.
We all laughed very hard at this. So, after that happens, the whole reason for this, presumably, is so the Christian Slater can be like, yes, I wasn't lying. See, right, there really is an attempt being made on my life.
He's already not lying, and
right.
Critical Jim, not that he would have known this, is already on his way to the police.
Right, yeah, so like there are, again, Christian Slater cannot know this, but like there are actual attempts on his life going to be made soon when this happens. So he then says to the police officers, will you put me in this minimum security prison somewhere else, which is where the diamonds are buried, but they don't know that. And also while I'm in this minimum security prison, I want to be able to garden every day and let my homing pigeons fly free and then come back to me. Everyone's like, beautiful. I love this idea.
It's so funny to me that he can dictate, hey, can you put me in this minimum security prison and also let me do these things that you probably don't let other prisoners do.
Right. And it's one of those things where, like, the police officers seem to imply that they know that this is, like, not right. They know that he's up to something.
They will do, like, they would do that for him if they put him in a safe house. they would
in a safe house, but not in prison.
I know. Yeah, I'm just saying, like, if for informants, for people who are going to inform, they would be like, sure, have your weird burns. And
no, yeah, I would too. I think the fact that it's a prison though is when you start to get like, maybe we should take a closer look at this. And then they let him dig repeatedly throughout this prison yard while he is surreptitiously putting these diamonds on the homing pigeons, throwing them in the air, letting them fly to Portia de Rossi. They fly back to him. He does the same thing the next day. Only on fucking the last day does Detective Horvath be like, hey, should I poke around in this area where he's been digging? They show them several times watching him dig, and they're like, what do you think he's doing out there? Like, I don't know. It's very suspicious. We should keep watching. And that's it? You're just going to stand there and be like, deeply suspicious, deeply suspicious. Like, go over there, poke around in the dirt with a stick, see what might be buried under there, or see what he's doing. Like,
this is also the section of the movie where we're supposed to believe that through these little notes that he sends wrapped around the diamonds to Portia de Rossi is how they, like,
fall
in love with each other. But it first of all, it's a massive cheat because we never actually have to see them have much of a conversation, right? And it just sort of montages that. But it also means at the end when they're like, oh, I love you, I'm like, oh, I guess.
Yeah, you get basically two real conversations between them. You have the one where they're on the, where she's on the bike and he's like on the bike next to her going away from the prison where she feels him on her childhood. And you have the scene where she visits him in prison and they sort of have like an emotional moment where she's like, and I'll be going to Canada then, you know, I guess I won't see you, blah, blah, blah. And those are really kind of the only two moments where you are told to think, oh, they're in love. This
because
is love.
Before then, they have the most, like, weirdly intense, polarizing dislike for each other.
Yeah.
That comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, it is like he comes at her at 11, but in a,
who is
in
this,
like,
dame?
Not in a horrible way, just the way where he's like, who is this dame?
Yeah.
And then questions her ability to, like, help them find the diamonds. And, yeah, I admit, it's like it's a crazy thing to say to someone you just met and have no context for.
Mm-hmm.
But then her reaction matches, if not exceeds.
Right, and she's like, well, I instantly dislike everything about you. Yeah. And, like, now I hate you. We're
done.
And,
like, comes up with this, like, fake rule to be like, well, now I get all the diamonds.
Right.
Because
you're stupid.
She doesn't even want the diamonds, but she's just, like, basically, like, yeah.
Being petty.
Being extremely petty.
It felt like the writer / director didn't have a lot of great ideas, obviously, for how to, like, show this acrimony, even not, like, let alone where it comes from, but just showing it in action. Because I think there was a completely random moment where they're in her weird pottery studio.
Barn?
Yeah. I was trying to avoid that.
Pottery barn.
Not to be confused with pottery.
At one point, Christian's later, like, what's this? And she just turned, like, whips around and hisses,
It's an urn.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, like, I don't think you needed to put that much mustard on it. Like, it wasn't an insulting question.
Yeah. Also, like, I don't know that was the question that he, like, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think he was asking literally, what is that?
Yeah.
Right.
It's just sort of asking, this situation is good. So we're in a pottery kiln.
Yeah.
You're preparing for heist. Anyway.
I mean, the other thing I would say, too, is that when we were watching this, I think it was Yuli who said that there is a very organic reason why she could hate him, because she could associate him with her father having been shot.
Yeah.
Which would make a lot of sense. It would make perfect sense if, you know, she gets to see her father who's just broken out of jail. This guy just helped him break out of jail. And then later that night, a bunch of guys come by who are trying to kill the other guy and they shoot your dad and he is dead.
I mean, there's a mechanism. The father is a mechanism through which you can both have them not like each other at first and also get to like each other later, because they both have a positive relationship with her. Although, again, the Richard Dreyfuss's character is incredibly underutilized.
Yes.
So it wouldn't work in this iteration.
No.
But, you know, in an iteration.
In a movie that worked, Christian Slater and Dreyfuss would have, like, a bond in prison that they'd later on be able to, like, sort of commiserate and sympathize over his death together.
Yeah.
Richard Dreyfuss exists basically in, like, looks and reactions.
Yes. There is a lot of it, just looking.
Yeah.
Or being standing next to someone
and just kind of smiling.
Yeah, like smirking or chuckling softly.
And then when he does deliver lines, I mean, we'll get into this in characters, I guess, but he's, like, so fucking quiet. I don't understand. He's, like, underplaying it in the weirdest way. Mm. So the character makes no impression.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, like, was that a part of his contract?
Right.
To just like, guys, I'm going to give 10%.
Yes.
Were you in the room?
If you want 15, that's got to be another $15,000.
Were you in the room for my theory?
That he had pissed someone off.
He pissed the director off, so he's like, I'm cutting you out of this movie as much as I can.
I
mean, it would actually be very funny if Richard Dreyfuss was not supposed to die until, like, the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And then they just, like, had, like, a dummy on the floor, like,
let's
Richard,
move it up.
Yeah, fuck it. He's dead now. You're gone, Richard.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, it's... His character's, like, weirdly, literally a ghost for a lot of this movie.
Yeah. You know what would be fun, though? If the movie ended with Tim Allen doing his little Singing in the Rain shtick, and then the camera pans up to the sky, and instead of the moon, it's Richard Dreyfuss's face. And he
just
smiles,
like,
and winks.
Just, like, smiling down.
Sort of like a, Mufasa thing.
He, like, forms
out of the clouds.
I would
also accept that, too, if the clouds form Richard Dreyfuss, and he turns to the camera and just smiles warmly.
But not say anything.
No.
Because that's
no,
too much. That's
no,
too
no,
much
no.
He didn't pay
no.
enough. He's not paid to speak, literally.
I wonder if he's technically an under five.
Oh, God.
The Richard Dreyfuss, the day player, basically.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, that's how it would work. So that, that animosity and that, and then the falling love are both like
perfunctory.
Perfunctory. It's like the writer telling the audience, like, accept it.
Right.
Right.
It's happening.
Right.
I mean, I would also throw in then real quick, too, another plot that I feel like is sort of stupidly handled in this is just the whole Cletus Tout thing to begin with.
Yeah.
Where Cletus Tout, we know, is a scuzzy journalist, a trashy TV journalist of some kind. He sees Cletus Tout, I mean, Kaiser Soze. He sees a mob boss's son, like, fucking and choking a prostitute. The prostitute is killed because he strangles the prostitute to death. He is filming this. Cletus Tout then has several copies of this and sends one of them to the mob, presumably to extort money from them. Shockingly, the mob just kills him.
I mean,
go fucking figure.
I will say, yeah, that is dumb, but I also believe that there's a person who does
that. I know, I can say this too.
All kinds of things.
I think the question that I would say, or like the thing that I would say though to this all, is that this is what the plot hinges on, this whole Cletus Tout thing. And the whole Cletus Tout thing is incredibly stupid and dispensed with pretty quickly. The fact that this movie is called Who is Cletus Tout? And I would say to that two things. One, we know who Cletus Tout is from almost the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
This isn't like some sort of Kaiser Soze thing where you're like, oh, who is this character secretly? And I swear to God, I thought for a while that there was going to be some twist where Cletus Tout was one of the other characters.
Yeah.
Because they say the whole thing about how, like, oh, everyone at the TV studio where he works with says he's like a master of disguises and wears fake mustache. So I was like, okay, is Tim Allen Cletus Tout? Is Christian Slater actually Cletus Tout despite denying that he is not Cletus Tout? But no, the thing that you learn almost immediately in the movie, Christian Slater, despite being thought of as Cletus Tout, is not Cletus Tout, is true and remains true for the rest of the film. The other thing that you learn from that is that while you know who is Cletus Tout, you don't really know who is Cletus Tout because Cletus Tout doesn't matter. You barely even see this character. This is, again, someone whom the movie hinges upon, arguably. And I think that there is a way you could certainly do it where the character who is died is kind of a MacGuffin, a plot device that doesn't really matter. But the fact that they're putting this sort of emphasis on just fucking calling the movie Who is Cletus Tout makes it feel to me like this character should matter in some way.
Right,
and the answer is no, he doesn't
There's like a version of this movie where the movie kind of flirts with this. The idea is that he's supposed to, like, just take this man, this dead man's ID and go get a new life or whatever.
Right.
But because he has to go to the apartment and he's a ghost and no one ever sees him, it's this sort of thing where, like, suddenly somebody, one of the neighbors sees him, and before he knows it, he has to full-time play Cletus Tout and sort of, like...
That'd be interesting.
Embodies the... Like, sort of... It very quickly cements himself as the canon Cletus Tout because no one's ever fucking seen him before.
Right.
And now, like, he has got a million people who will, like, swear up and down.
Right,
that
that's
is,
Cletus Tout, yeah.
That's
he
Cletus
said he
Tout,
was.
And the only, like, evidence we have of the real one is, like, burned to a crisp.
Right.
So that could have been a fun movie. It's not the one we see.
No.
Again, there's a lot of, like, but I do think in this case, it's just a bad title.
Yeah, no, no, I definitely agree with you. I think almost anything would have been a better title.
I think it's just
frankly.
Not a fitting title for the movie.
Titling it that way draws more attention to this issue.
I think it's also called that because somebody thought Cletus Tout's a silly name.
It is.
Right, you know, it's
a silly name, but, like, they're like, that should just be the title.
I mean, it does feel like sort of like a... you know, done by like a testing group or something who came up with this title, because it does feel like a title that you would naturally advertise as being like, on December 1st, all of America will be wondering
who is Cletus Tout.
And so it does feel like you're sort of stoking this mystery, but it feels then, if that's the case, that the publicity team has created a mystery where the movie has none. You know, the movie is outright saying, like, no, Cletus Tout's dead. He's the guy who died who you thought he was. This is not at all a mystery. But because it's called Who is Cletus Tout, I'm watching it the whole time thinking, but Cletus has to come back in some fashion, surely, right? But no, he's dead.
Are we missing any of the really bad sort of internal logic failures here?
I think basically those mafia goons we keep seeing are, it's, I guess, a bit of a subplot or a running gag that they just keep biffing their...
Well, the thing is, they didn't biff it.
Right.
Well, the initial one, but in future ones, they...
Well, yeah, they do, but it's like... I think that I say justice for those two
moments. Yeah, I almost kind of like the idea that, there could be, this could be done with a little more sense of irony, that the fact that like these two quote unquote idiots managed to do it right the first time and everyone else is fucking stupid
right.
and thinks that they actually did not do it. It almost, again, that could sort of even be kind of a twist at the end if you wanted to do it. You know, if you wanted to play this even a little more vague and have Christian Slater not be, I guess, narrating the movie to a third party, you could almost play with the idea that, oh, Christian Slater is an unreliable narrator. Right. Maybe he truly is Cletus Tout and he's just lying to you, the audience, about saying he is. But mm-hmm. again, no, that's not the case. That's not a twist that happens at the end. He's dead.
I would just like the twist to be that they don't get killed, and rather than that, it gets put out by the newspaper or whatever that like, oh, actually that was Cletus Tout, and they're like, see? And they get promoted. And that's the
end of the movie. You're the head of the mob now.
All right. Let's talk about the style of this movie and the choices. And we're gonna include the score in here because the score really impacts, I think.
Yeah, that it does.
How the movie is interpreted.
I kept having to remind myself this was made in the early 2000s. It looked like it was made in the early 90s.
No. Well, I mean, to me, I would say it looks like it was made in the late 90s, which it probably was. But it's for me as late 90s because, again, it reeks of a very post-Tarantino-y sort of...
I guess it just looks like a different late 90s than, say, 3 to Tango, which was also late 90s.
Sure.
But had a, if nothing else, a more professional look to
I
it.
I think the thing you need to remember is this is Canada.
It is Canada.
Keep forgetting that.
This is Canada standing in as city generic, non-specific.
It is Canada, and also, like, not the glorious world of architecture.
Right, the fancy world of architecture.
In Chicago!
I would also say, again, this is probably also still cheaper than 3 to Tango, which I'm sure was not expensive, but this is definitely has a very, very small indie budget sort of vibe, too. So, like, yeah, I think it probably looks kind of shitty partly because there is no money, but I would also venture to say this is terribly directed.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the, I feel like this is one of those things when you always hear in film school, don't direct the thing that you write, like, until you have a little bit more of a, you know, handle
distance
on how to do
it. Right.
This kind of, I think, is why you shouldn't do that. It feels like you need someone there pushing you to sort of ask, why is this happening? How does this make sense, etc. So in terms of style, for me, I would just say that, you know, I think you can kind of tell what the director's influences are. I think the director should not have done this movie. You know, I think it needed a different director to sort of make it pop a little more.
Or at least just, like, I guess make more interesting decisions. Like, there's nothing, like, characterful in the camera movements.
No, it's not, like, particularly nice to look at.
It's not stylish.
Yeah, it's almost...
There's not, like, an aesthetic, necessarily.
Right. I mean, it almost feels like... This is such a weird thing, too, because I've seen, and this, I think, just probably speaks to the talents of the people making this movie. I've seen so many noir movies done on such a fucking low budget, and it seems like it's, you know, I don't want to say so easy to do, but it feels like if you're making a cheap movie, noir is kind of it, you know, because you don't need a whole lot of, you can keep things very dark, very low light, and it will still look interesting. This doesn't look interesting. If you're trying to make a neo-noir movie, which I think it kind of is a little bit, I think you could stand to play a little bit more with that, but it's shot so flat and so TV movie.
I mean, it's so weird.
Very TV movie.
Again, you guys all talk about this, like, you said the thing, like, Tarantino and neo-noir, but I really think it, like, to me, I always interpreted this as trying to be, like, a sort of, like, lighthearted caper romp.
We're not saying this has anything to do with the tone, but there are aspects of this that at least reminded us of Tarantino.
Yeah, I don't, I'm not saying,
the tenor of the conversation, the saturation of references.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not saying that it's trying to make a Tarantino movie completely in tone, but it feels like it was definitely inspired.
Well, yeah, maybe. But
yeah,
like,
it's definitely more, like, lighthearted.
It's in conflict with this sort of, like, thing, like the score, and it's a very bright movie.
That's the whole, like, sort of noir thing, right? Like, you would think that at the very least, if you wanted it to be sort of more interesting, it could be darker.
Yeah.
Like you said, it doesn't seem like the tone for this movie is supposed to be entirely dark because it ends sort of optimistically with the villains all dead, you know, with the couple together.
Well, and the music is, it at times just feels like it was, I don't know, like taken from Matilda or something.
Yeah, no,
like
it is very child friendly.
And it's, at times it feels like we're in like a family movie.
The bit that really gets me every time is the way that every time the diamonds are shown.
Yes!
There's like, there are sparkles that are in time with like the ding,
with the light catching. Yeah.
And then whenever that whole montage of like, diamonds, birds,
diamonds and birds.
Yeah. the music is so ridiculous and overwrought.
It is fucking laying it on thick.
It's these, like, romantic sweeping strings that are just soaring and, the romance of it all.
This score, just to note something, is by Randy Edelman, who also did the scores for Dragonheart and V.I. Warshawski.
Wow!
In terms of movies we have done.
He's a Y-Watch special.
Yes, he is. This is his third Y-Watch movie.
So does this make him basically the
official
have we had anyone
composer?
Else score as many movies?
I would have to look. I feel like it's entirely plausible.
Because maybe he's the Y-Watch composer in residence.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, when you think about the score from Dragonheart and how that one piece of music gets played all the fucking time, like, you know, it just feels like, boy, this guy was really not trying this time.
He tasted success that once and he was like, okay, it's Dragonheart from here on out.
Yeah. Yep. I can rest on my laurels now. But I mean, it's just, for me, it's one of those things where, again, if you are working with a smaller budget to begin with, don't try and make your Casio keyboard sound like a full orchestra.
Right.
Just keep it to a small group of musicians, you know, especially if you're going for something stylized, you could just do like piano, clarinet and brass or something like that and be perfectly fine. Maybe throw in a guitar and you would have a score that would hold up for the movie. Like, I think it's frankly more of a creative challenge than trying to make a synth or a keyboard sound like a full orchestra.
I'm overstating it, but it just, the fact that it's like a weaker instrument that you're using to try to achieve larger, more kind of like grand musical aims, sort of reminded me of how, remember how in The Room all of the music was like MIDI, like MIDI score. That's just sort of what it reminded me of. It's like, it's clearly reaching for this larger thing,
right?
But it can't possibly get there. Like, it's not going to work.
Right. So I think that this is all certainly not helping the sort of tone problems of this movie in that sense either.
Right.
Where you're going for the most sort of hackney, laying it on thick, romantic MIDI tracks playing versus the opening and the closing and several other scenes are sort of like, no.
So you also have certain scenes in this movie are jarringly different from this tone.
Yes.
Like, again, the scene that Tim Allen demanded to be in the movie.
Right.
Yes.
And the other Tim Allen scene at the end of the movie where...
Singing in the Rain?
No,
before Singing in the Rain.
Before Singing in the Rain where...
He's on the train.
I love you.
Yeah.
I love you.
No, I'm talking about when he's letting him go.
Oh, yes.
He's like, all right, I've heard the end of your story. We have, and you haven't, your like narrative isn't wrapped up yet.
Right.
And I'm fully on your side. And I find out that like two mafia goons are about to come kill you. He's like, all right, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to give you the gun. You have to go kill those two mafia guys because you're the main character of this movie. And if you don't do it, then I'll shoot you. And it's like, wait a minute, what?
Right. And Christian Slater's understandably like, I'm sorry, what now?
I'm sorry, you want me to kill two people? And he's like, I'm not going to shoot people. I don't kill people.
Right.
Ever. And he's like, you do it or I'm going to kill you. And it just suddenly becomes very like, menacing, and also like, oh, Tim Allen's character is actually just kind of
a scene person.
Yeah. There's a moment before that I kind of wish they had played a little bit more like that, because I don't know if you guys remember, but there's a part where he has Christian Slater like kind of completely tied up in the chair with his hands strapped down, and at one point Tim Allen pulls out a dagger and like comes toward him, and Christian Slater's like, what are you doing? And he's just like, I'm letting your hands go. Now you can like gesticulate when you talk to me. It makes it easier. Like, it would have been interesting if for a brief moment you see Tim Allen like pull out a knife and like get close to him, and you're just sort of like, oh my god, has this guy gone round the bend? And instead in the movie just plays it like, nah, come here, I'm letting your hands go. Like, it's not even played as a joke or something. It's like, it could have been a joke, it could have been a moment to show that this man is not all together there, but instead it's just sort of, here's a knife, I'm gonna cut your hands loose so that you can use them to talk, continue. Like,
it wouldn't have even been a particularly impressive misdirect, but it would have been something.
Right, yeah, it would be like, some sense of like actual style in a movie that is so desperately trying to show style.
I also just want to point out, if we're talking about moments that just felt really out of place of the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
I understand it's a very disturbing event, but the way that whole sequence where you see the mob boss son
choke out the
prostitute
is
shot and edited like it's like Discount 7, like Fincher or something. Like, there's all that weird, like, rapid cross-cutting.
Right. Very quick. Of like her just going,
eyes gasping, choking, fucking, and that particularly is where it screamed to me TV movie.
Yeah,
because it was not very elegantly done, but it did feel like it was grasping for this gritty kind of scary.
Feels like we can't show this to the like.
So we're cutting
around.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. They're gonna slap us with an R rating, so we have to cut around any sort of boobs.
Yeah. But regarding the whole scene, the whole thing with like Critical Gym and the weird scenes there, again, It feels, it's way before Collateral came out, mm-hmm. I think. Collateral was much later. Not much later, but definitely.
It's later.
They could not have been cribbing or wanting to aspire to be Collateral, but they were definitely aspiring to be Collateral.
Right, yes. They but didn't know, but they are.
They didn't know that they were, but yes. They were.
This, like, strangely mannered and effective.
Yeah, this, like, sort of tense relationship between a right. guy who's under hostage, essentially, by a hitman who's, like, cerebral and mysterious and dark and dangerous, but instead they got Tim Allen.
Right, and it's also, it is sort of a question of, like, I assume Tim Allen is playing this role as written and told to by the director and writer, you know? So, like, one must assume that at no point was this character supposed to be more threatening, but it would be certainly more interesting if this character just sort of came off as, like, obsessive and not quite well versus being sort of like chummy and, you know, dare I say, sitcom dad the entire time.
I do kind of wonder if that was the intention. Like, are we meant to believe that crazy scene in the subway was like completely...
I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah, I mean,
the only thing I can believe is that Tim Allen wanted that.
Yeah, there. I think, again, there is a better movie of this too where... That is part of it, you know, where you are getting these asides from Tim Allen and you're not quite sure if he's making them up because he loves the movies so much or if he's just actually telling things that really happened. And you're either way, you're thinking something's wrong with this guy. You know, either he did the thing or he's just making up absurd things. And but either way,
this is alarming.
Right. Yeah.
That end bit is like he goes from a guy who likes movies to a guy who's insane and delusional.
And believes he's in a movie. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Which, again, that could be something.
It could be like, something, but we don't know.
Yeah.
What is it supposed to be?
Yeah.
Well, do you want to transition to talk about just the acting?
Yeah, I think that's good.
Talk about
fixes. Yeah.
Christian Slater.
So Christian Slater as Finch, Jack Nicholson as Cletus Tote.
I mean, he does his Christian Slater thing. It's a little turned down.
Yeah, I would say.
He doesn't get to be as much of a weirdo.
He is playing more of a mannered straight man.
Yeah, it is a mannered straight man role. And also, again, I do want to say, I think this is just the writing. I think that he does a fine job performing. But he's just so remarkably unmolested by, what's the word I'm looking for?
I'm not
sure. Unbothered.
Okay.
By being held hostage by a guy that's about to kill him.
Right.
He's so calm.
Right.
And at no point does he seem that alarmed by it.
I mean, yeah, and again, I think that comes down to the fact that, like, Critical Jim is so dialed down and goofy in his... That you look at this and you're like, someone should be having a bigger reaction right now. I don't know who, but someone should be. But both of them are just sort of acting as though it's a minor inconvenience.
He's also pretty not that fussed by the guy in prison trying to kill him several times.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Maybe he's just, like, not...
Maybe he's like
he's just so chill.
Yeah, he's just Bugs Bunny.
That's his Elmer Fudd. Sure, he has a weapon, but I'll be fine.
Yeah. But again, there are things he plays up. But again, I think that he's fighting a badly written character in a movie.
Yeah,
also poorly directed.
Yeah, like again, having to do this like really intense animosity. I think that he actually at least makes it a little more, I don't know, compelling or believable than it being made up from nothing.
Right.
Like, you still have no idea where the Dame thing comes from.
Nope.
Right, no, that's so fucking weird. Because, and then again, the movie, like, even has Portia de Rossi pointed out and be like, yeah, like, I'm sorry, like, have you been in prison since the 1950s or something like that? And like, yeah, she's right. That's a fucking weird thing to say.
It is a crazy
and it's also a weird sentiment to have. Like, it is both a weird sentiment and a weird way to phrase it, you know?
Yes.
Like, it's just sort of two bizarre red flags popping up that, like, don't seem to be at odds with his character to begin with.
Yeah, especially because... It's not just some Dame, it's his daughter.
Right.
So
and, like, you can infer that, you know that, because she came in and said, hi, Daddy, and hugged him. So, like, you as an observer know what's going on here, but you're immediately like, oh, who's this dizzy Dame in our scheme?
I mean, he easily has a point about, like, you know, the fact that does she know what she's getting into?
Right.
She's becoming a criminal if she does this. That's valid.
Yeah. The weird pseudo-misogyny with which he launches into it, where it's just like, oh, a woman? Like, we have a woman around now?
Does she know what she's getting into has no connection to what is this Dame doing here?
No, exactly. Yeah. That comes out of nowhere. But I'm saying if you wanted him to have an overreaction, he could have
Right, yeah, again, we're just, we're clearly doing, like, the work that the movie couldn't see fit to do once again. But,
We can't help ourselves. Yeah. That's why we have this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I still kind of think that I might have been more interested in seeing him play Critical Jim. Because I feel like it would be a more interesting... First of all, Critical Jim would then be a more interesting character, which I think the movie needs.
He's also a more capable actor.
Right. I think the movie needs Critical Jim to be, like, a weirder character more than it needs this lead to be a compelling character, if that makes any sense, you know? Mm-hmm. I feel like anyone else could have probably played Finch instead of Christian Slater, but Christian Slater would have been better suited in Critical Jim.
Yeah, I agree.
I do think that he is a perfectly good Finch, though, because we talked about him not being, like, a sort of traditional leading man, that he's got that sort of shady look about him, which I think fits the character of this career criminal.
Yeah.
He's, like, very much lived his life, at least, doing this kind of thing. And knows the ins and outs of it. So in that respect, he's at least fit for the role.
Yeah.
What about Portia? I guess Portia de Rossi?
I guess God. Portia.
Well, I guess we got to talk about Tim Allen.
Right, I mean, we got to talk about who do you want to go into
first?
We've talked
about Tim Allen a lot.
Let's just try to, I guess, wrap it up.
Let's put a button on Tim Allen's performance.
Yeah.
I don't know who. No,
yeah.
It cannot have been
extremely miscast in this movie.
The performance doesn't match the character. I don't think he's necessarily bad, but I also just don't like Tim Allen.
I would say, like, so, I think he's kind of trying.
Yeah.
I do think, again, speaking to the fact that he was in this movie in this first place, he must have liked this for some reason, you know?
Yeah, I bet you this was different from what he had been doing before.
Or no,
which
is
either family films,
right,
or
I mean, mostly
sitcoms.
Yeah, mostly TV and family shit. So, like, I'm sure that's probably why he did it. And so I get it. I get why he would want to do this movie. And again, like I said, I do think he's trying to play the part well, but I think he's terrible at it.
Yes.
I think Tim Allen is good at playing sort of sarcastic put upon every man, or like a pompous asshole who doesn't realize that he's not as skilled as he thinks he is.
Sometimes it's both.
And right. And like, those are like the two ends of the spectrum, and he drifts between them.
Yeah.
And like,
it's a Venn diagram.
Yes, right.
Crossover.
Yes. And it's just one circle.
Like, you can kind of make it out on the edges of this.
Yeah,
different shades,
but mostly it's not a MasterCard logo or anything here. But yeah, so I think that nothing about his skill set would indicate that he could have played this character well, and he doesn't.
No.
No.
And if what we think was a Tim Allen insisted scene, whatever, was actually written into the script, presumably for any other actor to play, it's just with him in there, you immediately are just like, okay, well, this is so Tim Allen.
Right.
It hurts. Like,
right.
Portia de Rossi, my summary of her in this movie is that she's really struggling her best to do something with a character that's, like, accessory.
Yeah, absolutely.
Has
a character that has
the movie.
Almost
nothing
no personality
on.
Except once a photo.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess
we don't even know why
right.
a photo is...
Right.
She's just meant to be a sort of, like, antagonistic
I'm sorry,
foil.
Did you remember, did I even cover... Was that even in the summary? Do you remember, like, the importance of the photo?
When Portia de Rossi, baby her character, plants the diamonds with her dad... That she's like, wait, don't put it in yet. And she hands a photo. We don't see the photo.
Right.
I've seen this movie before,
right.
So I don't remember a lot about it. However, when I watched it, I remember every time I would see something, I'd be like, oh yeah, that's going. I remember
right,
all
right.
this. So when I watched this again, I was like, that's her mom. That's the photo of her mom.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys think that?
No.
You didn't.
I mean, I thought it was just going to be her and the dad, honestly.
Me too.
Okay.
I thought it was like Us Against the World.
Subconscious memory resurfacing.
Yes.
But I was like, oh yeah, that's a picture of her mom.
It would also be a fairly cliched choice to make, right?
Yeah.
So but I had thought that when she put it in. Now, regardless of the significance of it, we don't know the significance. We're not allowed to know, because if you're a newcomer to this movie, you have no idea what she puts in.
Right.
And then she insists that all she wants is, quote unquote, the box.
Right.
In terms of that she wants the picture.
Right, the picture in the box is what she's speaking. Yeah.
And she cries when she finally sees it.
Yeah.
Do they even say that's her mom, or do they infer because it's a picture of her, the three of them together?
I would assume. I don't remember if she outright says, like, oh, mommy.
And why is it important? We don't know.
Right, no, again, like, why did she put it in?
Did you not have any other
right, yes, exactly.
Her?
I could understand maybe just you like the photo, but do you not have another copy of this photo?
I love this
photo. Do you
have
another
so
photo
much,
of your mom?
I want you to bury it.
Right, yeah, and again, like, why did you throw it in the box in the first place? You know, it's not like this was an accident. It's not like your dad slipped something in there.
Wait, I mean, again, it feels like we had either the movie was longer, like the script was longer, and it had a bunch of details about why the dad stole diamonds and why the mom's buried with them.
Mm-hmm.
Is there significance there? And I know she's in the fosters. I'm just drawing. I'm just like spitting out
right.
a story about why these.
Right.
I think the intention. I think the intention of her character was supposed to be some kind of like, ooh, he's met his match and she's given him as good as he can. And it's not, it's just not there. It's not written into the script. And I think Portia de Rossi's a good actor.
Yeah.
She just can't summon lines that aren't written there.
Yeah.
So
we don't know like what her character's deal is. Like she's
a potter.
She, right. She owns a pottery.
System. She does pottery.
Yeah.
Does she know how to do crime stuff?
Kind of seems
like
she's comfortable doing
she's
it.
She's crime adjacent.
Yeah.
She seems really into guns.
She either knew about her dad doing crime before and is cool with it or helped him, or she put together a toolkit for her dad, but, like, was that a correct toolkit? I don't know.
Yeah, just truly, like, what is their relationship? What was their relationship? Did she, I assume she must have always, I guess, known that her dad was a career criminal from, like, a young age on, because otherwise that's a weird conversation to have later on after the fact and still walk away relatively okay with everything, you know? It's just, just horrendously underwritten. And also at one point, Tim Allen likens her to a Katharine Hepburn type. And, like, I don't want to be rude to Portia de Rossi, but like, she's not a Katharine Hepburn type.
Well, I don't think Critical Jim, I think whoever wrote that line is the movie references off there.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Not a Katharine Hepburn.
Right, because he also says, like, an ingenue, but tough, like Katharine Hepburn. That's not Katharine Hepburn. Yeah.
You've got that wrong.
Right. Again, I think this just speaks to the movie using the most surface level sort of cinema quotes.
If they had actually chosen maybe a deeper cut of an actor to make a more accurate comparison, it just wouldn't have played as well.
I would say My Man Godfrey, that one, Carol Lombard.
Lombard, yeah. Yeah, Lombard could have worked.
Played airy-like characters, but they hadn't edged them a lot of the time. She's doing her best.
Yeah, she's trying with nothing.
There's no writing for her. And then, honestly, it's a sort of sliding scale of importance.
I feel like Dreyfus isn't doing anything. Barely exists.
But I don't know if he's being told to do nothing.
Right. Or, give us nothing.
Something's going on with Dreyfus.
Yes. That should have been the title. Something's going on.
Yeah, what's wrong with Dreyfus?
So there's a story about Richard Dreyfus' movie, and I want to know what it is.
No. I mean, truly, the man has, I don't know, 10 lines of dialogue, dies after 20 minutes.
And he has this, bizarre quiet and calm.
Just this image in my head of him just being in a scene, just smiling.
Yes. I mean, he does, I mean, it's like the scene at the prison at the beginning, as soon as the tough guy.
The same haircut. Right. And, the glasses, so it's like.
Yeah, do you know how this happened, by the way?
You are a modern-day Richard Dreyfus.
I put the wrong head on my trimmer and just went, and I'm like, well, now I'm committed, gotta go all the way. And one of the kids, when they first met me and saw my hair this short and obviously didn't have the context of, my hair used to be longer, was like, are you sick? Like, no, I'm okay, thanks.
Oh my God.
It'll grow back.
Yeah. Something's going on with that.
Yeah.
Oh my God, maybe this should be my Halloween costume. I'm younger. Richard Dreyfus.
I'm Richard Dreyfus in Jaws. I told you there's a shark on the beach.
If we're judging an actor by how good he can stand around and smile.
He wins the Oscar this year, I guess.
It made no impact, but it's
remarkable how little presence he has in this movie. As a character, as an actor who can normally play a lot of loud, irate, frazzled characters, why do you pay him just sort of stand there and be like,
He very quietly, what was he like, Merci?
He said unto you. Because the guy's joking about him having a French name.
Right.
And Billy Connolly laughs like he's just told a joke.
I guess we talked about Billy Connolly last.
Billy Connolly is very fun.
Yeah, really fun. I wish he mattered.
So much energy that I was sad when he was all under the movie.
Guns a-blazing.
Right. Tits a-popping.
Everyone needed to be at that level.
Yeah, literally, he pops her tits out.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I did not understand his comment where he was like, I was looking right at the tit. Look at her, she's like a carnival ride.
Well, the carnival ride
is a good bit of. That's a good bit of the movie. Well, it's because you think it's less creepy than you think it is.
Right,
because
he literally means he's taking out her tits.
Yeah, I
tend
to take out her tits because I found her.
Right.
But it's like, he's like, oh no, this is a huge creepy guy. And then you're like, oh, never mind. He's just.
Yeah, I know, he's just talking about her implants and tracking them down.
I really enjoyed him and his performance. I kind of felt like everyone needed to take cues from where he was at.
Yeah. He didn't add that energy.
He had energy. He was like, things were sparking. I was engaged with the movie.
Yeah.
And then he's gone after a few scenes, and I'm like, okay, I don't care.
I think he also did a decent job of playing equal parts, goofy and, straight.
Yes.
You know what I mean? He was able to sort of thread that needle in a way that I wish almost everyone else in this movie had been able to do. I think maybe just one of those things where, Billy Connolly's a big enough force of nature that if you just let him on set, he'll just, find the proper level for the scene and go with it.
Okay, if we have to swap characters around, maybe Tim Allen is the coroner. Maybe Billy Connolly is...
Tim Allen.
Huh? Or he plays Finch, and we get Christian Slater.
I would think of anything, Billy Connolly should be Richard Dreyfus. Oh, I can and see I think that. You could also have him hang around a little bit longer, too. And then you could have Richard Dreyfuss come in and be like, I'm a coroner. Yeah.
I always look at her tits first.
Then you can't swap for this later because then Tim Allen has to be Finch, and that's no good.
Then we kill Tim Allen.
I just want to point out, my fix.
We set fire to his car.
Tim Allen was the coroner. Then we see him very little.
In my fix, Tim Allen is the guy spray painting the wall.
And then Billy Connolly shuts up.
And is like, what do you do to America? My home country.
All right.
Anyway.
Are we done?
Yeah, are there any more characters?
No,
are characters still welcome here?
There's a slew of character actors.
A bunch of Canadians.
Or whatever.
Let's do fixes.
Yeah. Let's just get there.
You go first.
Me? Okay, so I have like a couple vague ideas for this. I don't really have one whole concept that I'm working with here. One, my original thought was, in theory, if you are married to this idea of Critical Jim being this sort of meta character who's always talking about the movies and how much he loves them and that sort of thing, in theory, if you're married to this like concept of doing dumb shit about the movies, like, I don't inherently hate some of the ideas that are being laid down here. I kind of like the idea that maybe in a smarter version of this, which I don't feel like I have the time or inclination to write, you could probably find some sort of way to use film projectors as, you know, part of your scheme, and then you're sort of being like, oh, how very cute and metatextual we are. We literally have film projectors that are helping us escape from prison. And you can sort of liken various people's roles in your escape to prison with various people who make movies, like someone's the writer who's coming up with the actual plans. There's like the producer who's making it all happen. The director's making sure people in the proper place, blah, blah, blah. So if you wanted to do like some dumb shit like that, that could be perfectly fine. I kind of like the idea that if you were following that line of thought, then maybe you would even go full tilt into it and sort of have cute meta moments. And Christian Slater would be like, and then there was, of course, Micah, who I went to prison with. And you see some random guy entering as Micah, and Tim Allen's like, I kind of see him as like a Richard Dreyfuss type. And then like Richard Dreyfuss walks in dressed up in the same way. And he's like, yeah, that's who it is. And so I feel like you could kind of lean into the fact that this is all being filtered through Tim Allen's movie-addled brain. And so you're really kind of aggressively leaning into both the tropes of this sort of thing. If you wanted to, just as like a desperate attempt to try and make RuPaul feel like an actual character in this movie, I kind of like the idea that you could give RuPaul's character more to do by making them sort of a more traditional femme fatale and have no one ever react to this in a weird way. As soon as as soon as Christian Slater walks into Cletus's apartment, RuPaul is there like with his legs like out like this and is just like, oh, hello there, I didn't hear you come in. And Christian Slater reacts to this like totally straight and not as the like, gay man, what? Or just sort of like, hey, they're beautiful, like get those gams out here or something like that. So I think like that could be kind of fun if you're sort of commenting on old Hollywood versus the modern day cinema in a way that I think this movie kind of wants to sort of be doing. The other thing that I would kind of say is that maybe it should just be a movie about Christian Slater is an escaped convict who assumes the identity of a man who the mob wanted to kill. And now he has shown up and says, yes, I am this guy who you thought was dead. And everything goes from there. You don't even need the whole, we escaped prison to dig up diamonds and then had to get back into prison to get the diamond. That's all so stupidly written that you could just have it sort of be a bizarre comedy of errors where everyone assumes that this person has died. Then a guy who shows up wanting to avoid all attention and says like, yes, incidentally, this is my name. I'm this guy. And the entire mob is like, waha! And everything goes out of control from there. I think that's basically two kind of half-assed ideas. Any one of those could theoretically work and make this something stronger.
Do you mind if I go next?
No, absolutely.
I have a different take, but there are some similarities. The one part of this movie that I thought was kind of interesting was Christian Slater in the prison, the minimum security prison, quote-unquote guarding and sending off pigeons. Yeah. So in my mind, I'm just relocating everything there.
To the mental institution on Christmas Eve?
Never live it down. No,
never,
never, ever. No, it's still going to be the minimum security deal. But I want to have a lot of the characters. I'm changing this into being. They're aware that Cletus Tout is an alias. In this version of the movie, it does not actually belong to a person. Some detective will say, "Is I don't know, fucking played by Tim Allen, or whatever." That's all. That's what he says all of his lines.
We can pay him even less.
He's put on the case of, you know, the missing diamonds, and some thief who went by the alias Cletus Tout pulled off this heist and hid the diamonds somewhere. And they're like positive that he's so sure that the criminal who responsible is in this prison. And it's in this prison that we have Christian Slater, that we have RuPaul, that we have, I don't know who else you want to put in there, maybe some of the mobsters. We could keep the guy with the weird hair in the shank. Everyone's doing their super weird thing. I think the game is everyone is sort of equally suspect of being quote-unquote Cletus Tout. Mm-hmm. I think there's some kind of old film club happening there that's run by the creepily silent inmate played by Richard Dreyfuss, whose daughter, I'm still going to have you, Portia de Rossi, but who visits and is also potentially an element in whatever scheme is happening. We can still have these movie references things, but I think we can find a much more fun height with them by basically using those different genre constructs and tropes for each person's story when Tim Allen is interviewing them. And I think, and I think this would be a difficult needle to thread, but I think it would be fun if each individual character is interesting enough and their little vignettes or whatever, their interviews are fun enough, that it kind of doesn't matter who Cletus Tout is, and that maybe the end is intentionally quite, like, neatly tied up in a bow to maybe imply that this is also, within the world of the movie, a false ending or a false story. But I also want each individual character to at some point claim to be Cletus Tout. And I'm kind of maybe happy with the idea of we just don't know who actually is, but we just got to spend time with all this great character work. Anyway.
That's not your problem.
No.
Yeah. And we're done.
You're welcome, audience.
Later.
I didn't think a lot too hard about a fix, but I really, in a minute since I, on the spot, came up with it, have taken to the idea that he has to, it plays out similarly where he has to get these fake IDs. And he gets Cletus Tout, and Cletus Tout is the target of the mafia. I think somehow in a way that isn't as immediate, I think that maybe they don't know where the tape is. He didn't send them the tape, mm-hmm. They think he has the tape, and so they're not ready to kill him, and they don't have proof that he's seen it, but they're sort of, like, threatening to bust kneecap stage.
Yeah.
I think that, like, maybe he dies for some other reason or whatever, and he, like, goes to the guys, to the house or whatever, and ends up having to, like, assume the role of Cletus Tout quite quickly because of some other shenanigans that happen, but mostly because nobody's fucking seen him, but he meets all these neighbors who are like, ah, yeah, he entered the door, and mm-hmm. I spoke to him, ergo, he's Cletus Tout.
Right.
And he has to keep coming back because he can't find the stuff that he needs to find. And he has to, like, I think that part of the movie is, like, he has to sort of unravel, like, why the fuck are people after Cletus Tout, and I have to sort this out, and also deal with the diamonds thing.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea that Finch, rather, the character, that the reason he got in jail, and, like, a lot of, like, he has this character trait where he tries to be this career criminal who, like, is just keeps his head down, does his own thing, but at very critical points in his life, can't help but, like, see someone that needs help in an immediate, like, in prison, like, that's how he, but I think that's how he gets, ends up in jail in the first place. It's like he was running away or whatever, and one of his associates was about to get caught, and he helped them, and then he got caught instead. I think in jail, that's how he became friendly with Richard Dreyfuss's character, because Richard Dreyfuss was not a career criminal and doesn't know how to operate in prison, and he helped him out, and got the stink eye from that awful...
Yeah, the prison jerk.
Sort of prison jerk. And I think when he first meets RuPaul, the neighbor, he also has to, like, get RuPaul out of a situation really quickly, even though he's trying to keep his head down and get in and out. And so RuPaul becomes, like, an early ally, being sort of an alibi for, like, yeah, absolutely, that's my man Cletus Tout. He's my neighbor. So RuPaul can now be, like, there to sort of help whatever going on with this, like, Cletus Tout situation. And I think that I just get rid of Richard Dreyfuss' character sooner, because I kind of wonder if it should be a thing where, like, the daughter gets to have a relationship because he visited, but he just dies from some, like, disease or heart attack or something in prison. And it's very sad.
He died doing what he loved.
Yeah.
Being in prison.
It just still kind of Monte Cristo thing where, like, they had plans to escape.
Right.
And, like, he dies.
And he dies and he's like, no, you must go without me.
Yeah, okay. So you have to go. And then he has to, like, so he might have, like, a vague notion of who Portia de Rossi's character is, but he's not obviously not allowed to, like, meet your friend's daughter in prison.
Right.
So he knows of her, but not doesn't know what she's like or anything, and they have to, like, work together to get the diamonds. And I think that she instantly becomes pegged as Cletus Tout's girlfriend because mm-hmm. she's coming to hang around Cletus Tout's apartment, and then so she becomes part of this whole, like, oh, now the mafia is looking for Cletus Tout and they want to put the pressure on it. Oh, look, there's someone that's close to Cletus Tout that we can use. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a movie that's centered on Cletus Tout. And I do kind of want to play with the idea that he has to learn who Cletus Tout was as a person, that there's, like, maybe there's some flashbacks or just like a bit of the plot is devoted to who was this guy and what was there more going on with him, etc.
And how is Cletus Town?
Yeah, no one asks how is Cletus Town.
And why is Cletus Town?
It's truly remarkable just hearing you say that, why Richard Dreyfuss dies when he dies in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, it could have happened earlier, it could have happened
so
later.
Random.
Why
it does feel
now?
Random.
Yeah. Why now,
Gun
Richard
down
Dreyfuss?
In a hail of shattered ceramics.
Yes.
Yeah. Would you recommend it? I say, you know
you
what?
You did.
It's free on YouTube.
It is free on YouTube.
It is free on YouTube.
It is
YouTube,
under 90
enough.
Minutes.
It's not painful to watch.
Watch it if you had a crush on Christian Slater.
Yeah.
Ever in your life.
Or watch if anything we've said sounded like weird enough that you want to check out.
Yeah. If you want to see Richard Dreyfuss smile. Silently in scenes.
I would say no, I don't recommend it. It's just so frustrating to see, like, the gulf between the aspirations of this
yes.
movie and what this movie actually is.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, it's a fucking Grand Canyon.
It's reaching for style, but...
Yeah.
We land in slime.
Yes.
I don't know where we land.
Yeah, slime.
Yeah. Slime. Guys, come back at us in 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
We'll do another mini episode and
another
introduce
mini episode.
What we'll be doing for our next movie. In the meantime, like us, rate us, review
yeah.
us.
Yeah, draftpack.com is the website. That's really all that counts.
5 stars
yeah.
only.
Yeah.
5 stars.
5 stars.
Find us on the podcast apps.
Yep.
Is that the bottom?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
I don't even know what that was.